exhausted, drained. The crew's quarters were hot. The entire ship was uncomfortably hot, soggy, pungent with sweat and the enervating, inescapable heat seeping in from the torrid, blanketing atmosphere outside our hull. The bulkheads felt warm to the touch despite the ship's cooling system. The deck felt slippery, slimy to my bare feet. At first I thought my exhaustion might have been the symptoms of my anemia coming back. But as I showered and shaved with a trembling hand, I realized that it was emotional exhaustion as much as the anemia or the heat. My emotions were being whipsawed. It was more than I could deal with. Marguerite claimed she was not sleeping with Fuchs, yet she seemed tied to him more strongly each time I spoke with her. There might not be anything left of Alex for us to recover, and even if there were, it would be Fuchs claiming the prize money when we got back, if we got back, not me. I needed Fuchs's blood to stay alive, yet the transfusions were endangering his health. He was obviously not his old, powerful, self-confident self. Something was gnawing at him. Were the transfusions sapping that much of his strength? Or was he feeling some form of guilt over the deaths of Bahadur and the two other mutineers? I couldn't imagine Fuchs feeling guilt over anything, nor allowing himself to slowly die by giving his blood to me, especially to the son of Martin Humphreys, the man he hated more than anyone else. But Fuchs was weakening, whether it was physically or emotionally or a combination of the two. And that frightened me more than anything else. I realized that I'd prefer to see him at his old tyrannical, demanding self than watch him sinking into moody, listless malaise. I needed him, we all needed him, to run Lucifer. Without Fuchs, the crew would upship and leave Venus for good. Without a strong and vigorous captain, I'd be defenseless against the crew. If I tried to keep them from leaving, they would slit my throat just as they'd murdered Sanja. And without Fuchs to protect her, what would happen to Marguerite? No wonder I felt overwhelmed and exhausted, and helpless. I was in the galley trying to get some breakfast down my throat while the sour body smells of my crewmates made me gag, when the intercom blared, "Mr. Humphreys, report to the captain's quarters at once." The others sitting around the crowded galley table glared at me. I gladly dumped my meal into the recycler and hurried down the passageway to Fuchs's compartment. It seemed slightly cooler in his quarters, but that was probably because there were only the two of us in the compartment. He was sitting on his rumpled bed, tugging on his boots. "How are you feeling?" he asked as soon as I closed the sliding door behind me. "All right," I said warily. "Marguerite tells me you need another transfusion."
"Not just yet, sir."
He got to his feet and went to the desk. His face wore a sheen of perspiration. "I thought you'd like to see the latest radar pictures," he said, pecking at his desktop keyboard. The wall screen lit up. I saw the rugged mountains of Aphrodite, and down in a narrow, sinuous cleft, the bright scintillations of a strong radar return. My heart leaped.
"The phosphorus?"
Fuchs nodded, his face somber.
"Looks like it. Has the right profile."
I stared at the screen. The wreckage of my brother's ship. Whatever was left of Alex was down there, waiting for me to recover it.
"He could have picked a worse spot,"
Fuchs muttered, his eyes also fixed on the screen.
"But not by much."
"That's a pretty narrow valley," I said.
Nodding, Fuchs muttered, "On Earth there would be devilish air currents threading through that valley. Here, well, we just don't know."
The mountains looked raw, new, even in the radar image. Sharp and jagged as if they had been thrown up only recently. Those mountains couldn't be new, I thought. Not if Greenbaum and Cochrane were right, and Venus's plate tectonics had been locked up solid for the past 500 million years. Vulcanism was also a puzzle. There were plenty of volcanoes to see, but none of them appeared to be active. Yet something had to be pumping sulfur compounds into the clouds, and volcanic eruptions seemed the only reasonable source for the sulfur. But in the century or so that probes had been observing Venus, none had ever seen a volcano erupt, except for the eruption that Truax reported. And that scared me to the marrow, with visions of Greenbaum's theory erupting in our faces.
I knew that a mere 100 years is less than an eye blink when it comes to geological processes such as plate tectonics and volcanism, but still, Earth and Venus are almost exactly the same size. Earth's interior is still bubbling hot. Given such a similar mass and size, Venus's interior must be just as hot. Hardly a year goes by on Earth without some of that interior heat forcing its way to the surface in a major volcanic eruption. If there were no volcanoes blasting out boiling lava and steam for a whole century on Earth, the geologists would go insane. Yet for the 100 or so years that spacecraft had been observing Venus, there had been no recorded volcanic eruptions. Until now. Why? Was Greenbaum right? Was Venus's crust getting hotter and hotter, edging toward the moment when all the surface rocks actually begin to boil into molten lava? Was it all going to blast right into our faces? "Come with me," Fuchs said, snapping me out of my terrifying thoughts. Turning away from the wall screen, I saw that he was already at the door and already scowling at me in his old impatient way. I almost felt glad. He led me aft along the central passageway, then down a ladder into a small bare compartment. A heavy hatch was set into its deck. Fuchs worked the control panel on the bulkhead, and I realized the hatch opened onto an airlock. He clambered down into it, then after a moment or so, popped his head up above the level of the deck again. "It's all right, Humphreys. There's pressure on the other side. Come down here." I stepped to the lip of the hatch and saw that he had opened the airlock's bottom hatch and was starting to crawl through it. I climbed down the rungs set into the circular wall of the airlock. The metal was shining, new, hardly used. There was a ladder extended below the bottom hatch, and I went down, one rung at a time, and planted both my feet on the deck. Turning around, I saw that we were in a small chamber, something like a hangar or a narrow boathouse. And, sitting there, filling most of the chamber's space, was a sleek, arrow-shaped craft of gleaming white surmet. Its pointed nose was transparent. Its flared back end was studded with a trio of jet nozzles.
"What do you think of it?"
Fuchs asked, actually grinning at the sight of the vehicle. "Rather small," I said.
"One man. That's all it'll hold."
I nodded. Walking slowly around her, I could see several manipulator arms folded tightly against the vehicle's sides. I also saw the name that Fuchs had stenciled on the side of the ship. Hecate. He saw the questioning look on my face.
"A goddess of the underworld, associated with witchcraft and such."
"Oh.
This ship will take me to the surface of hell, Humphreys. You see the allusion."
"It's a little rough," I said.
He huffed. "I'm only an amateur poet. Go easy on your criticism."
"This ship will maneuver on its own?" I asked.
"It won't be tethered to Lucifer."
"That's right. No tethers.
Hecate will move independently."
"But..."
"Oh, I know you had a regular bathysphere on your ship. It wouldn't have worked."
That nettled me. The best designers in the world built that bathysphere for me.
"Yes, of course," Fuchs sneered. "And you were going to hover your Hesperus over the wreckage and lower your armored bathysphere to the surface."
"Right. And the tether connecting us would also be an umbilical that carried my air and electrical power and coolant."
"So I gathered. Did you think anyone, Duchamp or Rodriguez or God and his angels, could keep your mother ship hovering in place over the wreckage for more than 10 minutes at a time? You'd be swinging back and forth in that stupid sphere like a pendulum."
"No," I snapped with some heat. "We did simulations that showed we could pinpoint the ship's position. The air's so dense down there that hovering is no problem."
"Maybe in a nice open plain with plenty of elbow room. But could you hover precisely in that snaky valley where the wreckage is?" Fuchs scoffed. "What did your precious simulations show you about that?"
I glared at him, but I had to admit, we didn't do a simulation of those conditions.
"But those are the conditions we actually face, aren't they?" he gloated.
"Do you really expect this vehicle of yours to get you safely down to the surface and back?" With a confident sweep of his hand, Fuchs answered,
Hecate was designed after the submersibles that oceanographers use back on Earth. They get to the bottom of the deepest Pacific trenches, 10 kilometers and more below the surface.